Yeah.
So we did Taboo, which ran till 2009. Then what?
Ten, I think.
Yeah, 3 years.
I think that we opened the Complètement Cirque in Montreal. That was the their very first circus festival with Taboo. And that was, I think, 2010. And it was quite nice to go to Complètement Cirque this year in July and meeting quite a lot of people that said, of course I remember Taboo. You know, that, you know, it's quite nice to know that it remained quite impressed in the...
Yeah, it was one of the first... Well, it was the first time we went outside Europe, wasn't it? So,
and it was the first time that used the La Tohu like that. Never, you know, apparently it was never used like that again.
So the Tohu, just for the listeners, is a round circus building, but mostly they play in the round with seating. So
yeah.
That was the first time they ever put a show in there that didn't have the seating and was just back to the basic building.
Yes. It was quite revolutionary there. And one of the things that they were saying in a place like Montreal, which is, you know, a cradle of, you know, established and emerging circus, it was how dangerous what we were doing it looked, you know, how mad we were to have Foucault doing flying pole in that way without being attached. You know, there were quite a few people that were commenting on the courage, the daring, the not just in the format but also in how we dealt with some things.
Well, I think it was a contrast to the Canadian circus scene at the time, which was sort of much more founded on Cirque du Soleil being there for a long time and everything being very safe and not very, you know, really, really high-skilled.
High-skilled, but
without risk-taking artistically.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think hopefully we influenced some of the Canadian companies to...
I would say that there are certainly people, whether we influenced or not, I think that people... did not just watch the show and eject it like, you know, you eat a burger and it's gone. It stayed very much as an experience that people remember. So, and then came, you know, different projects that came in between that were more about like Labyrinth in Eden, like...
So tell us about Labyrinth. What was it?
Labyrinth was... So we... This first idea of a collaboration with a space, like the Eden project, came about, and there was a desire from the, you know, from the venue, and talking to Tom and various other people about activating and transforming and making a space look and feel a bit different. So I remember going to do a site visit and thinking it's like, you know, multiplying. If when I came in 95 in Dumbles Road, the warehouse was multiplying a staging, a proscenium, or even other projects that I was doing by, I don't know, 12. You know, the Eden project was multiplying the tent and, you know, the scale of what we were doing to, you know, 10, 12 or 15 that would resonate.
But so it was basically great. It was promenade over the whole site.
It was, you know, it had... A venue where we would do the main part of the show, but it was also activating, you know, a lot of other places by creating very precise installations, very, you know, very much working with that tree, with that round, with that bench, with that, and making each thing look like part of a journey that then it will take you to the main show, as well as, you know, Shayna, you know, the shutters of the main venue would open out at the end, and Shayna would, you know, with a big wheel, the big hoop would fly out into this open air rig that, so,
which is a donut again, wasn't it?
It was part of the donut. With
the donut got
legs.
A lot of use because the donut went from immortal into doing part life.
I know.
For 2 or 3 years as well. And then came back to Eden. So yeah. That piece of set definitely had its money's worth.
Its time, definitely. And
in fact, there's bits of it still in there now, isn't there, in Bianco?
Is it the donut or is it the taboo... Is it the donor?
Sure.
Is that, I think it's...
We're very good at recycling in this company.
We've got to. But yeah, the donut was there as a circular, a bit lower, because in Immortal it was a higher structure.
Yeah, I chopped the legs off for part life. Chopped them in half to make it from 2.4 metres to 1.2 metres.
Yeah.
So we could have community on it as well.
Mm. So that Labyrinth project then went into the idea of potentially using a space like Eden as a place for creation and development of a new show. So that would have been, Labyrinth was a one-off. It was something that was created for Eden, but had no desire and no aspiration to tour in the tent, while from there, you know, into the next development, there was this talk, okay, what about developing a new show that would go quite seamlessly-ish from the Roundhouse to the Wales Millennium Centre to, you know, from Eden to the Roundhouse, to the Wales Millennium Centre, onto the stage, and then straight into the tent. And the Eden Project providing the nurturing, the it was like a residency to start creating that. That's where the snow, the revolving beads, the swinging lamps, and quite a lot of the features...
From Bianco now, which we're just for the listeners, we're now touring. So this is the third year of Bianco on tour?
Yeah, it's...
so it went on tour in 2012, did 2013, was in Eden in 2012. What year?
So is this the fourth year including Eden?
That's what I'm struggling to remember. I think it is.
I think that this is the third year.
Of touring it.
Yeah. And that we...
Yeah, so 13, 14 and 15.
Yeah.
And we made it in 2012 in Eden.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, so what about Bianco? What's special about this show? What was the artistic vision behind...
A lot of the... we went from Immortal that had more deputy-side places to raise the performers and quite a lot of aerial, to Taboo that had these big trampolines that transformed the space in a particular way, created walls, created a reveal for the flying trapeze to transform the space in a different way. And one of the interesting things about there, it was also a very different use of light that was brought by Ali Stephenson, that brought a much more theatrical and powdery feel. I loved the big tableau in Taboo where everybody appeared, and it felt like a company of 30 when they were all on the croissant, on the half donut. And I thought that one of the things about Bianco that took us a few years, you know, anyway, to develop was to be able to create structures that would it activate the space, but would not be very big, clumpy things that would
wouldn't get out of the way.
Yeah, like the bridge, for example, in Taboo, that was difficult to then move around. So, again, that possibility of working in a way that the baguette for swinging trapeze comes down, you know, the big truss for swinging trapeze comes down and goes in baguette style, that quite seamlessly, but, you know, we've always done it. It's a part of No Fit State to do rigging in performance, to take big pieces up and down. I think that in the course of time with No Fit State and with also me understanding different things, it has refined itself into a more...
delicate.
Yeah, into something that is a bit more of a dance rather than, okay, we've got to get this clumpy thing up. And, I mean, the last thing, the underpot, what I call the underpot, is... I think that the underpot is really for a new show because it was...
too late in the R&D to properly investigate the use
and,
of it.
And also, you either sell Bianco or you... you know, it's quite difficult when you already have a show where the expectation is for producers and presenters to see Sage at the end, to see this, you know, we buy this, we buy the dress, we buy, you know, to actually completely give them something that is...
yeah, we kind of subvert the shows, but kind of keep the images so that they don't complain about getting something different.
Or at least...
and if you do something completely different, then they'll start to, it's been an ongoing thing, hasn't it?
I know.
So, what do you really like about working with No Fit State? Presumably you do, because you're still here and it's 11
after
years.
After all this,
More than 11 years.
Well, if
it's
we...
20 years this year since you first were involved with us.
Yeah, if we count the Autogeddon, and, you know, that's certainly... I think that it's... I think that No Fit State allows me to do things that I wouldn't be able to do with other things, but also...
it's about scale, isn't it?
It's about scale. It's about challenge. It's about challenge. It's about a company that really now embraces the feel of really... you know, whereas at the beginning it was Mad Firenze going, you know, oh, what's she on about type thing. I think that now there is a little bit more understanding. Okay, well, you know, maybe this one will not work, but this one will definitely work. Or, and I think that the collaboration, the hunger as well for creating something that is out there, it has a quality, has a level, but is also quirkily presenting something a bit off the beaten track. I think is more accepted rather than will we be able to do it? Will we be able to do it? You know, I love that. And I think that collaboration, I love when Lindell goes, I've really worked on this and I want to show you. You know, when the first time the underpot went up, I thought it was the most beautiful object in the world. It was so light and so, you know.
So I'm going to ask you one more question, which is, what do you think you've done for No Fit State? And what's No Fit State done for you?
Ooh. I think we've done for each other. I think we've done things for each other. And as you say, I wouldn't be here if... I feel that a bit of the work that has been done, Immortal Taboo, and not just through me, but through a combination of things, and has helped to be out there as a desirable company to be with. And it was quite flattering for me to hear Jeannot to say, when I introduced myself, the director of Eloise, to say, yes, of course I know Nofit State, and of course I know the... You know, sometimes it's not... You know, it's the underdogs that go, everybody else is bigger brother and bigger sister. I think that it's out there and people... And so I think that part is certainly... There must be something that I've done with the company and with the performers that they enjoy doing, and that creates day after day, every time I come back, their desire to perform this show and any show, that. And for me, I think that we've already, we've said it, and I continue to say, if there are new challenges, I think that would be great to continue to open different alleyways. If this one is a consolidated format, okay, it's difficult, it's expensive. There will be a market that will find it more and more difficult to buy it. Then we can explore other things, but it's not a mummified rose yet.
Yeah, okay. And what's your favourite memory of the last 20 years?
I think that quite positively, I would say it was the first Immortal. We were just about to open Immortal. It was the opening day. I was absolutely up to my, hair like this, and everybody was running around. And as a director, there is always that moment where you go, there's nothing else I can do. Now everybody, I don't have anything to do because now everybody else is doing it. And Marco came with this tiny little baby and said, look, I'm busy, hold that.
And hold the baby.
Hold the baby. And I went, well, this is it. This is it. This is the circus. This is the show. This is, at this moment in time, I've done the work, and all I can do is just hold this baby because everybody else is busy, and in a moment we'll just open the doors. It just calmed me down in a way that I always remember that. Marco going with this baby. Obviously, Zoe was also busy, and so everybody, and this baby was, going, baby, you know, and then went, okay, here we go. You hold that. Brilliant.
Okay, thank you very much, friends.
And the baby was projected in the first Immortal in the tent.
He was.
Yeah.
And now he's 12 years old.
Yeah.